This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
What a pity William Shakespeare didn't choose to write a play about King Harold, whose life and reign came to a bloody end at the Battle of Hastings in 1066, which 1,000 years on is still the most famous date in English history. Shakespeare did choose to base one of his greatest works, as it turned out, on the life of an 11th century king, but he opted for Macbeth, King of Scotland, instead. In truth, Shakespeare's Macbeth is only very loosely based on the actual King of Scotland, who was not the tyrant painted in the play, didn't murder his predecessor Duncan in his bedchamber, and who was not, as far as we know, urged on to evil by three weird sisters. Those elements were woven into the story for dramatic effect. The real life of King Harold, on the other hand, unadorned with equivocating witches, imaginary daggers, and walking woods, has all the elements of a gripping historical drama and a great tragedy. Not that the details of his life are easily agreed. Harold's reign only lasted from the 5th of January to the 14th of October, 1066, and as the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle languorously recorded it at the time, he enjoyed little tranquillity the while that he wielded the kingdom. History is written by the victors, and they insisted Harold was the very worst of men, a usurper and a liar who had no right to rule. William of Poitiers, writing just a few years after the conquest, put it most strikingly, "Not for this insane Englishman the decision of a public choice. He seized the royal throne with the plaudits of certain iniquitous supporters and thereby perjured himself." But was William of Poitiers any more true to the life of Harold than William Shakespeare was to Macbeth? The Anglo-Saxon Chronicle clearly approved Edward the Confessor's decision to appoint Harold as his successor. The prudent king settled the realm on high-born men, on Harold himself, the noble earl, who in every season faithfully heard and obeyed his lord in word and deed, nor gave to any what might be wanted by the nation's king. Harold was not born to be king. He was not even born to succeed to his father's position as Earl of Wessex, as he had an older brother, Sven, who might have fulfilled that role had he not been too much of a villain, even for the darkest of dark ages. Sven was the archetypal bad son and embarrassing brother, officially condemned in his time as a man of no honour. Quite a villain, he abducted the Abbess of Leominster and may well have been responsible for the murder of his own cousin Bjorn. Expelled from England and then Denmark, he met a violent end on returning from a pilgrimage to the Holy Land to atone for his many sins. By comparison, Harold was the good, dutiful son and became the standard-bearer of his family's rise to power and glory. Not that this was achieved without a great deal of political intrigue and a fair share of violence. Although Harold was only king for 9 months in 1066, his journey to the throne can be traced back decades to the determined efforts of his father, Godwin, and of the whole family. Godwin had been granted the important earldom of Wessex by King Canute, cementing his position by marrying the king's sister-in-law. After Canute's death in 1035, there followed unsettled times in England and in Scandinavia as rival claimants struggled to take control of his various kingdoms. Eventually, Godwin welcomed to the throne in England King Edward, to be remembered in history as the Confessor. Welcome may not be quite the right word. Between King Edward and Earl Godwin, there were to be years of tension and mistrust, as well there might be. The eyes of one of the pretenders to the throne, Alfred the Aetheling, had been put out with a red-hot poker, leading quite swiftly to his death. This had been done with the connivance of Earl Godwin, and Alfred the Aetheling was Edward's brother. These tensions came to a head in 1051, when King Edward banished the Earl of Wessex from the kingdom. Banished with him was his entire family, including Harold and Edith, Godwin's daughter, even though by then she'd been King Edward's wife and queen for several years. The immediate cause of this dramatic expulsion was Godwin's refusal to punish the people of Dover for the mistreatment of a visiting dignitary, Eustace, the Count of Boulogne. But above all, it was a trial of strength, one in which the king was able to prevail, but only for a short time, as next year Godwin and sons were able to literally force their way back into England, recover the earldom of Wessex, and restore Edith as queen consort. Just a year later, Earl Godwin died, suddenly during a banquet, according to some wag, choking to death while attempting to declare his undying loyalty to the king. He might still have held hopes that his daughter would yet produce a son who would one day inherit the throne. Edward and Edith had married in 1044 when he was 40 and she was about 20. They were not blessed with children. but Godwin could scarcely have predicted that it was his own son, Harold, who would become King of England in just a few years' time. In Harold's story, the character of Edward the Confessor has to remain somewhat ambiguous. 100 years after his death, Edward was canonised as a saint and gained the sobriquet of Confessor in posthumous recognition of his piety. He wasn't seen as particularly pious when he was alive, though he was responsible for the construction of Westminster Abbey as a grand church, suitable for staging royal ceremonials, which luckily was more or less ready by 1066, a year of 2 coronations and a funeral. But the idea he was any holier than the average king may rest on the notion that Edward and Edith's lack of children resulted from his lifelong chastity. But was the marriage really unconsummated? Or was Edith barren? Or Edward impotent? Or gay? Or something? The jury's out on this question, and it's unlikely ever to return with a unanimous verdict. But if Edward's character is somewhat obscure, that of our hero, Harold, leaps out of the historical record, however much we may disagree about his morals and motives. He was no saint, but a good-looking, strong, virile leader and warrior, an impressive man to friend and foe. The chronicler, Odric Vitalis, described him as very tall and handsome, remarkable for his physical strength, his courage and eloquence, his ready jests and acts of valour, though he added, "But what were these gifts to him without honour, which is the root of all good?" This alleged lack of honour was the key justification for William's invasion. After his father's death in 1053, Harold steadily became more and more powerful within the Kingdom of England. Unlike his father, he was the king's trusted right-hand man, administrator and army chief of staff. In the last years of Edward's reign, in some documents he's referred to as sub-regulus, the under-king. In the Bayeux Tapestry, the memorable visual representation of the conquest, seen from the point of view of the Normans in general, and Bishop Odo, William's half-brother in particular, Harold is subtitled early on as not merely Earl of Wessex, but the Earl of the English. In 1063, with his brother Tostig, Harold campaigned with some brutality and great success against the Welsh, and defeated their king, Gruffydd ap Llywelyn. Gruffydd was finally killed by a fellow Welshman, who then sent Harold his severed head. For 20 years, Harold was married to Edith the Fair, and they had 5 children. But they were married in what was called the Danish fashion, something like a common law marriage not recognised by the church. So late in life, Harold was able to marry, more formally, a second wife, yet another Edith, the daughter of the Earl of Mercia, in a move calculated to bind the Midland earldom to his cause. As it happens, this Edith was also the widow of Gruffydd ap Llywelyn of the Severed Head. So here Harold's story takes a turn towards Richard III rather than Macbeth. Although this was a marriage of convenience, Edith II in due course did give birth to 2 sons. Affairs of state intertwined with family matters in another damaging way. In 1065 the Northumbrians rebelled against their unpopular earl, who was Harold's brother Tostig. Neither King Edward nor Harold could risk civil war with their friends in the north, so family loyalty was thrown out the window and Tostig was thrown out of the country. For Harold, this was only the lesser of 2 evils, as Tostig then became his enemy and threw his hand in with Harald Hardrada, the King of Norway, who also had ambitions on England. Edward the Confessor died on the night of the 4th and 5th of January 1066. On his deathbed, he's said to have revived from a coma long enough to indicate Harold as his heir. Even the Bayeux Tapestry includes this incident as part of the story. At the time he was expelling the Godwin family in 1051, Edward had designated William as his heir. But as he was dying, or some time before, he had changed his mind. In any event, it was the Wittenagemot, or Witten, the council of the nobility, which had the power to decide on the succession, and the Witten offered the crown to Harold, and he accepted. But should he, in honour, have rejected the offer and passed it instead to William, Duke of Normandy? The Bayeux Tapestry sets out at some length a description of a journey Harold is said to have made to Normandy a couple of years before. In the tapestry, the trip is full of incident, culminating in Harold, for some reason not made clear, swearing an oath of loyalty to William. Other Norman sources say he had been sent to William specifically to repeat King Edward's offer of the throne made in the preceding decade. This may or may not be accurate. The tapestry is a work of propaganda, and its creators and Norman historians generally were adept as any in embroidering the truth. There's plenty to suggest that King Edward no longer wanted William to succeed him, and strong indications that nobody else in England did either. In 1056, Edward the Exile, King Edward's half-nephew, had been brought back from Hungary to be available as a plausible blue-blooded candidate for the throne. This return of the exile required considerable effort, entirely pointless if it was understood that Duke William was to inherit the kingdom. As it happened, Edward the Exile died more or less as soon as he got back to England. Being a king-in-waiting is not always a healthy occupation. And even after the Battle of Hastings, with Harold and the cream of the English aristocracy dead in the field, Edgar the Atheling, Edward the Exile's young son, was the first choice of the Witten to be king, not the Duke of Normandy. Harold really could not have refused the offer of kingship. Harold was the most important member of the Witten and must have engineered its decision in his own interest. He was essentially making himself an offer he couldn't refuse and didn't want to. An ambitious man from an ambitious family, he had risen higher and higher throughout his life as a son, a soldier, a courtier, and a politician. To maintain this upward progress, he had fought his battles bravely, sacrificed his brother ruthlessly, and even taken an extra wife. Besides, nobody in England would have thanked him for handing the crown to a foreign duke, whether or not promises had been made and whatever oaths had been broken, all of which would have been forgotten by history had he been in a position to see it written from his point of view. The promises and oaths broken were only important to William, true or half-true or conveniently made up, because they justified the invasion to potential recruits to his invasion force and to the Pope, for whom the irregularities of the Church in England also warranted war being waged from Normandy. As Harold's story is an English tragedy, it's fitting the weather also played an important part in the way things turned out. In the summer of 1066, Harold deployed militia and irregular troops along the southern coast of England, like Dad's army, ready to repel the anticipated invasion from the continent of Europe. But ill winds did not favour the Channel crossing, so all summer long William was held up in Normandy, and eventually Harold's defence forces, who had the harvest to bring in, had to be stood down. But the ill wind did favour Harald Hardrada, the King of Norway, the last of the great Vikings. With 300 ships of fighting men, some recruited by Harald's brother Tostig, he landed from the North Sea, fought and won the Battle of Fulford, and obtained the surrender of the city of York. So Hardrada might have become the conqueror of 1066 and reclaimed Canute's kingdom for Scandinavia. But England wasn't going to be conquered quite yet. Harold Godwinson marched his troops the nearly 200 miles from London to Yorkshire to surprise, defeat and kill Hardrada and Tostig at the Battle of Stamford Bridge. But as every schoolboy knows, Harold then had to erase his troops down south again when he learned that William had landed unopposed at Pevensey Bay on the south coast. William and Harold met at the Battle of Hastings, which lasted the whole day of the 14th of October. William's mounted cavalry repeatedly charged at Harold's troops, who in the old English way had dismounted from their horses and formed up defensively on foot behind the wall of their shields. It was a day's battle to decide the fate of the whole kingdom. On all accounts, it could have gone either way, but in the end, William won and Harold lost. So Harold's story is a tragedy in every sense of the word. The Battle of Hastings brought death and disaster to England's elite, oppressive foreign rulers to the rest of the population, and something close to genocide in the north of the country, when in due course William ruthlessly imposed his rule there. The weather, fixture congestion and ill fortune all played their part in this disaster. It was not dishonour that was Harold's nemesis, but ambition. I have no spur to prick the sides of my intent, but only vaulting ambition which o'erleaps itself and falls on the other, as he, rather than Macbeth, might have said. King Harold had risen so high and staked everything to meet Duke William in battle. But as it turned out, William was even more ambitious, possibly somewhat better prepared. He hadn't had to fight a major battle a couple of weeks before, and certainly a little luckier. William had risen from being the bastard son of the Duke of Normandy and a tanner's daughter to become the conqueror and King of England, which by his conquest he utterly transformed. That's his story and his triumph, but undoubtedly Harold's tragedy.